Doom do 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 do. Plant friends, welcome to episode 76 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
My plant friends, how you doing? We're singing a song and I don't know why. Hi, plant friends. I hope you're having wonderfully planty weeks as per usual. I am still in DC recording this. When this airs, I will be home for 24 hours. I'm so excited. I was home for 3 hours last week, if you saw my Instagram. I've been on the road for 10 months now, and I have these like fleeting moments home with all my plants. And oh boy, do I love them. And I just want to say thank you guys. These 10 months away from home have been like unbelievably magical. It's been so great to meet so many of you guys in real life and obviously tour with Cats the Musical. That's been such a gift. But gosh, am I homesick and homesick for my plants. And you guys have really been getting me through. I feel like connecting with you guys, interacting with you, and also getting your questions for a lot of these interviews that I'm currently doing. As I mentioned last week, I've been doing most of my interviews this last month. Getting your questions and asking them to these interviewees I've been chatting with. It's just been a way for me to feel connected with you, but also connected with my plants in a weird way. And I don't know if that's really sappy, but I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for being with me along this ride and wackadoo journey of 10 months that I've been having. Welcome to October. I hope it's fall wherever you are. It's really hot here in DC still, so it doesn't feel like fall. But anyway, I noticed that in the scheduling of this season, So accidentally, but now officially, October is Growing Media Month for Bloom and Grow Radio. So last week, we had our awesome talk on the science of soil. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you listen to that little mini episode I posted with sustainability information if you're interested in that as well. This week is hydroponics. And then next week, I talk with this girl, Kay, from Inrooted Love on Instagram about the semi-hydro craze or passive hydroponics. So basically, this whole month is about different ways to grow our plants in different growing media. And I feel like all three of the episodes can be a little controversial because people have different feelings about soil and peat moss and hydroponic and semi-hydro with the LECA balls. But it's been really interesting and really eye-opening. So I hope you all walk away this month inspired to maybe try something new. And if not try something new, then I hope you walk away empowered knowing more about whatever media you are already using for your plants. So thank you. We have so many new patrons this week. Another thing that's getting me through is your support, guys, plant friends. I'm hustling so hard trying to get these podcasts out for you. And it means so much. I get a little email from Patreon every time one of you joins saying I have a new plant friend. And I get like a little zing of emotion every time I see it. So thank you, Kelly, Eileen, Antonia, Brooks Daniels, Justin Osterman, Dendrophilitic, Chelsea Baker, and Allison Milosia. Thank you all for joining this week. You're freaking amazing. This whole Patreon community is amazing, plant friends. You're paying for Aaron, my amazing editor, and now more. I want to start marketing the show online. I haven't paid a cent for marketing before, but I want to reach as many plant people as possible. So you guys are also going to start helping me figure that out, which is a whole nother ball game. So thank you. I appreciate you guys. I'm so excited about this conversation on hydroponics with Rob, who is the CEO and founder of Farm One. Hydroponic gardening is obviously such a hot topic right now. There's all of these different hydroponic kits you can buy and these farms like Farm One that are popping up, and people are really starting to try and figure out how to grow food indoors. And Rob is doing the most interesting things at Farm One. I was lucky enough to tour it about a year ago and meet Rob in person, and you'll hear more about it in our conversation. But Farm One is a hydroponic vertical farm in the basement of a Michelin star restaurant, 2-star restaurant in New York City. And they grow high-end herbs and spices and products for some of the fanciest restaurants in New York. And they do it all pesticide-free, hydroponically. It's such an interesting concept. And Rob is doing hydroponics at such a high level. And I'm so honored that he took the time to kind of walk us through the real basics of hydroponic gardening. So this episode is for someone who hasn't grown hydroponically, someone like me. Maybe I've had a couple of those like passive hydroponic grow kits I've used from Modern Sprout, but I haven't done any real intense hydroponic gardening. So the intention of this episode is for us to walk away with a broader idea and understanding of what hydroponic gardening is and why you might do it, and maybe inspire you to try play around. Winter's coming, plant friends. So, you know, we talk about winter's coming with getting grow lights, but also we don't have outdoors. We have less sun. Sometimes people get the winter blues. It might be fun to come up with some gardening projects indoors, and setting up a hydroponic garden indoors would be a great way to get through the winter and experience extreme growth and blooming and growing in any season, if you know what I'm saying. A quick disclaimer about this episode. So Rob and I were both in WeWorks. I was in a WeWork in DC and he was in a WeWork in New York. So the recording audio quality, plant friends, I have to say, it's not the best that Bloom and Grow has had on my end and on Rob's end. He tried so hard to get the music turned off at his WeWork and it couldn't. So when he's speaking, you actually might hear some music in the background. So just lean into it, enjoy it. It's nice background music. But yeah, unfortunately, the audio quality isn't the best, but the conversation is the best. So just lean into the fact that, you know, it's not going to be the highest audio quality Bloom and Grow has ever had, but that's okay because the conversation is amazing. And I figured I'd just give you that little disclaimer now. I hope this conversation gets you curious and gets you inspired. Today's episode is supported by my love, Soltech Solutions. We all know that Soltech Solutions make some of my favorite luxury grow lights that I have been using for over a year in my apartment. So, plant friends, if you are looking to get a grow light to help your plant babies get through this winter, or maybe if you are just expanding your plant baby collection and you need a grow light to increase the amount of highlight areas in your apartment so you can continue growing your collection while setting your plants up for success, you have to check out Soltech Solutions. So Soltech Solutions makes luxury plant grow lights that do not look like grow lights, plant friends. They look like sleek, sexy, modern lights that you can find in any home. But these grow lights have this cutting edge, highly specific full grow spectrum to keep your house plants and your fruiting trees happy and healthy. So Billy and I have three of the aspect hanging style pendant lights, and we figured that we would invest in these lights because we know that we can take them into any future home or apartment and just have them look like amazing high-end light fixtures in our place and not just purple grow lights. The Soltech Solutions Aspect Light, which is the hanging pendant light, was actually the first grow light I ever got to illuminate our citrus grove where lemony and limey hang out. We now have two aspects in that corner. We just bought a third light to put in another corner of our apartment where we have Figaro, our fiddly fig tree, and our Monstera collection. So that said, Aspect Light is a sleek pendant-style hanging light that is offered in white or black, and it comes with everything you need for an incredibly easy install. And now they have their Highland Track Light system, which is the first of its kind track light system that's perfect for illuminating green walls that you might want to install, or maybe you have large plants that need extra light on the sides of them, or maybe plants in hard-to-reach places. The Highland Track Light system is for you, and it's completely customizable on their website. All of the lights from Soltech Solutions come with a timer that is a godsend. So we have ours on 12 hours on, 12 hours off. We set it and forget it. And I'm such a dork that at 10 p.m., when the lights go off in the citrus grove, I say, goodnight, lemony, goodnight, limey. And Billy constantly rolls his eyes at me. But I love it. So if you're interested in bringing some Soltech Solutions lights into your home, head to soltechsolutions.com and use code BLOOM15 for 15% off. So use code BLOOM15 for 15% off your own Soltech Solution light at soltechsolutions.com. Rob, welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio to talk hydroponics.
Great to be here.
I'm so excited and honored to have you not only share your vision behind Farm One, but actually educate us on you're doing hydroponics at such a high level at Farm One. And I'm thankful to have your brain to explain to us how to be beginner hydroponic scientists, you know, make some experiments with ourselves.
Cool. I'll do my best.
I'd love to get to know you a little bit as a plant person. And how did you become the founder of Farm One? And where did your connection with plants begin?
Yeah, so it's funny because I really started my career completely the opposite of what I'm doing now. I started my career as a designer, grown up in the UK and Australia, which is where I was born. And we moved around a lot. And I'm someone who is really into sort of design and engineering and programming and that kind of thing. And so at the beginning of my career, I was building websites and actually started a startup company in Japan, which is where I moved to. for 8 years. And that sort of taught me a lot about building a business, but it was nothing to do with agriculture or farming or even food. But while living in Japan, you know, two things happened. I guess I got really more and more interested in food, and the food culture in Japan is, you know, is great and it's deep and it's detailed. And so I cared a lot more about food and what I was eating. And also, you know, what happened was, as building this startup, you know, I put my whole life into that company back then. And, you know, I put on weight, I wasn't super healthy, and I, you know, had experienced a few things which made me ultimately start to reconsider what I was eating. And so I had quite a radical change maybe about 6 or 7 years ago, where I changed my diet, I started eating a lot more plant foods, and started to sort of engage with that kind of fresh food and farmers markets and all that kind of stuff. And so when I left Japan and I left my company in 2015, I think that's right. Yeah, 2015, I had the opportunity to sort of do something new. And I sort of knew that I wanted to do something in food. And so I took a bunch of culinary classes, and I chose to do culinary classes in plant-based food. So I did a course in Thailand for a month, and I did something in LA for a month. And those courses really gave me the chance to go to farmers markets, discover new ingredients, and work with those fresh ingredients in a way that I'd never done before. And what I figured out was, A, I'm really interested in this stuff. You know, there's something compelling about discovering new flavors and discovering new foods. I thought that was really exciting. And also, I became aware of the seasonality in much more focus. And so the fact that you can go to the farmers market 1 week, get something great, and then the next week it's gone because it's out of season, you know? And so that was really intriguing to me. And I thought, hey, maybe there's like a technical solution to this. Maybe there's a way of using some of the technology I had seen on TV, where I'd seen people growing things under LED lights. I'd seen people using hydroponics, and I didn't know anything about it. But at the end of 2015, I decided to start researching this and decided to start thinking about starting a company to do these things. And so, long story, a little bit shorter, I, you know, ended up moving to New York. I'd done this basic research. I didn't really know that much about it still at that stage. So I knew I had to hire someone to teach me. And so the first employee I hired in New York was someone who had a background in hydroponics, and he helped us get started, helped me understand how it all works. And, you know, from there, it's now like 3 years later, and we've gone from that prototype farm that I started at the beginning of 2016 to now we have a much larger farm in Tribeca in Manhattan. And now we're working on, you know, building more farms in more locations. And so it's been a real journey of education for me. And now we have a business that actually works.
We'll talk more about Farm One at the end of the episode, but just so our listeners can get an idea, what exactly is Farm One? What are you doing in a basement in Tribeca that no one would really ever know about?
Yeah, so we grow a huge range of specialty produce for chefs. And so we grow microgreens, we grow edible flowers, we grow some rare herbs. And we grow the kind of produce that chefs are really kind of interested in, excited about. And normally, if they're not getting it locally from us, they're having to source it from California or other states and ship that product in. And so Farm One is a small farm. We're indoors. We're in a basement. And we use LED lights, and we use hydroponics to grow those plants in a controlled environment year-round. And that controlled environment allows us to, you know, very carefully maintain the conditions. So we have a very sort of precise way of growing, which is pretty different to growing outdoors and kind of letting the soil do its thing. And yeah, we work with about 40 different restaurants in the city. And as I said, like these, the kind of crops that we're most excited to grow, the kind of things that you don't get in the supermarket, the kind of things that a lot of hobby gardeners might be familiar with, but lots of sort of different flavors and unusual specimens going on.
Yes, when I took my tour, I remember like just kind of being blown away by the value of, you know, one flower of one plant, just how you guys are selling them. And another thing, the houseplant person in me was so excited when I saw that you guys are growing oxalis, because oxalis is an edible plant. And that's like a fun fact that in the houseplant community we always talk about, but it was so fun to see, you know, these houseplants that we know and love actually being grown for a different purpose.
Yeah, exactly. So there's plenty of things like that. And, you know, I think the oxalis, we grow a purple type, particularly, you know, it's got that sharp, like sour flavor. It also has little delicate pink flowers as well. And chefs love that, where they can get a really strong impact from a plant where it doesn't just look good, it also tastes amazing. That's a perfect combination for us.
Yeah, sour Skittles, I feel like, is our fun fact for those listening. If you have an oxalis plant and you haven't tasted it, you gotta take a bite of one of the leaves. So I'm going to pick your brain a little bit more about Farm One in a bit. But at first, let's just talk hydroponics. So a lot of us in the houseplant community, we're growing in soil, like we've been told to. But, you know, some of us have a science background or like to play mad scientist. We like to be a little bit more experimental. And hydroponic gardening indoors, you're hearing more and more about this, that hobbyists like myself might decide to grow, you know, all of my own herbs or grow tomatoes on my windowsill or invest in a small grow light and actually start trying to grow some of my food. So what is hydroponic gardening? Let's start there.
Yeah, so hydroponics really means growing in a water-based nutrient solution instead of soil. And it's a technology that has been sort of developed over the past few hundred years as we've started to understand more about plant science. And so if you think about it, it wasn't really possible to do real hydroponics maybe 300 or 400 years ago when people were still trying to figure out, like, what is it that plants need to grow? And as we've started to figure that out in terms of plant nutrition, gradually we've been able to build systems that can supply those nutrients to the plant. And so in a very basic sense, a hydroponic system has to supply water to the root zone of the plant. It has to let the roots get oxygen, and it has to supply those nutrients, and it has to have some way of supporting the plant as well. And so what you'll find is there are many, many different types of hydroponic system design, but they're all trying to solve those few problems. And one of the sort of common features is that either you're going to want to bubble oxygen into the water so that the roots can breathe, or you're going to maybe time the application of that water so that the plant's roots have access to oxygen some of the time. Or you might have a clever system design that might spray water on the roots, for instance. And so there's various different ways of doing it. But that's a sort of common kind of theme.
Why is it important? Why are so many people adapting a hydroponic lifestyle or a hydroponic approach to growing?
Yeah, so hydroponics, I think, is really interesting, especially in the context of cities and in the context of difficult areas to grow. The reason why we do it, for instance, is that we're in the middle of New York. You know, they're not making a lot of land here, and we want to grow year round. And so that suggests we should be indoors, and we want a consistent growing environment. And so you certainly can grow indoors using soil, and some people do it. What tends to be hard to manage, especially as you get bigger and bigger systems, but even on a small scale, is just making sure that that soil is healthy and pest-free and easy to work with. And it's one of the things that hydroponics can do is it can ensure that the plant has a really reliable growing environment where you're sure that it has all the nutrients that the plant needs. Whereas in soil, as you know, it can be hard to manage that and make sure all these different plants are healthy, because some of them have higher requirements of certain nutrients, some of them like an acidic soil versus an alkaline soil, and all these kind of things. With hydroponics, you can kind of make sure everything is like exactly as you want it. And that's why it's sort of become appealing commercially. It's certainly appealing for people who want to have reliable grow systems at home. And it's something where, you know, as we have all become more familiar with the technology, it started to get smaller and smaller. It started to get more accessible for people at home to use it as well.
It's so interesting because I feel like in my journey of my collection of houseplants, and I have 120 houseplants in 500 square feet, so a lot. Yeah. I feel like all I do is like think about, okay, where are these plants growing in real life? How can I like replicate their like real life surrounding? And that's like messing with the soil or making sure they have the right light or, you know, watering them in my shower to replicate rain, like all this kind of stuff. And then hydroponics feels like kind of the antithesis of that. It's like as clinical as you can be. Like it's as scientific. It's taking all of that idea of replicating out and being like, we're not replicating, we're elevating almost. Like we're going to find the best way to do this, probably more elevated than what they could get in soil, and make the plant as big and beautiful as possible.
Yeah, I think that, you know, hydroponics often attracts people maybe who are coming at this from a more of a science-based mindset.
Totally.
People who are more interested in engineering, maybe that kind of thing. So in some ways, it appeals to people who like to be able to control things, you know, whether that's a personality trait or something like that. And you can see why in a commercial environment, it's very attractive to control stuff. But I think also some people at home like to be able to have that level of control as well. And I think that if you look at the history of hydroponics, if you go back to the early 1930s, which is when the first sort of real reliable hydroponic solution was developed, called Hoagland solution, that was a somewhat primitive understanding of the plant. It's sort of like, what are the really basic things that you're going to need to be sort of healthy? And since then, there's been sort of a little bit of a split where you'll have people who use a set of chemical nutrients, which are pretty much the minimum that the plant needs. And then you'll have people like us who are using more closer to like a compost tea kind of set of organic nutrients to, you know, do what we believe goes a little bit further than that and provides, you know, beneficial bacteria, beneficial enzymes, you know, even beneficial fungi into the hydroponic solution. So there's that kind of two ways of approaching it.
Yeah. And oh my God, I have so many questions for you. So first off, hydroponics versus aquaponics.
Yeah. It's confusing, right? Because aqua just means water, right? And hydro just means water. So it's a silly naming system. And I don't know who came up with that originally. But hydroponics essentially is what I was talking about. So growing plants in this water-based nutrient solution. Aquaponics is an attempt to create more of a circular ecosystem where you normally have some kind of sea life or water life that is creating through, you know, its poop normally, nutrients for the plants to then use. And then in an ideal system, you may be feeding those water life some part of the plant as well. And it's something which appeals to people, again, who have this sort of mindset of wanting to create this kind of perfect system. It always sounds really great. It can be tricky to manage because you know how hard it is to keep plants happy, right? So if you've got to keep fish or, you know, other water life happy as well, you're kind of relying on being able to control two parts of the system, it can be quite difficult.
So aquaponics is fish waste as food. Hydroponics is mad scientists as food, creating food. That's what I'm going to call hydroponics, or a nutrient-based solution. Like you're using like little drip bottles full of, you know, different nitrogen, whatever, NPK, whatever all of it is. We'll get into what it is, I guess, in our conversation.
Yeah, so that's a way of looking at it. And then people also talk about aeroponics, which happens to be more a way of like spraying a sort of an aerosolized set of water nutrients on the plant's roots. So you might come across that as well.
Okay.
But it's sort of functionally very similar to hydroponics.
Now then, to be even more confusing, my mom loves AeroGarden. You know that AeroGarden setup? She's been using the AeroGarden every winter for forever. So yeah. AeroGarden is hydroponics or aeroponics?
The AeroGarden people have designed a certain lid. So if no one's seen one before, it's sort of like a little tabletop unit, normally fits like 4 to 10 plants on there. And they've designed a lid with an irrigation system in it where water can sort of spray up and collect in the lid and then distribute itself to these different plant sites in the lid. And you could either call that sort of a hydroponic system or an aeroponic system. They've obviously decided to say AeroGarden, and I don't think anyone's mad about that. But but in a commercial system, you might have a slightly different way of spraying that water onto the plants.
Okay, so there's a gray area.
Yeah, absolutely.
My mom would make me want to do shout out to AeroGarden right there. But,
it's a very popular system. Yeah, very popular.
Well, it's just easy. But I feel like now you're seeing a lot of easy, like at-home hydroponic kits that like we can easily buy and play around with, which is super exciting. And listeners, stay tuned next week. I just did an interview about semi-hydro or passive hydroponics, which is like a whole other subsect of hydroponic gardening, which was really interesting. Also, hydroponic gardening, I feel like that when I hear it in discussion, it's more around food than around houseplants, right? Like hydroponic gardening is where these like larger scale food growing, like commercial companies are coming from, right? And obviously cannabis as well.
Yeah. I guess it's interesting looking at the type of plants that people tend to grow hydroponically. You know, if you're not able to come and visit us, Disney also, you know, has had one of the largest sort of visitable hydroponics systems out there in Florida. You can go and visit them, and they're growing a huge variety of different large plants hydroponically. And so you can see the full range. And there's nothing technically stopping you from growing like a rosebush hydroponically or something like that. People tend to be focused on food because, you know, they're looking for that consistency year-round. They're looking to be able to grow things indoors in a clean environment. But there's no reason not to. And then I think that people have been attracted to it in terms of cannabis because they can grow things in a very small space, often maybe under the radar, for instance. So you can see why people are being attracted to that. But there's nothing inherent about hydroponics that means you have to grow food.
Okay. So I'm currently in DC. It's the middle of, you know, it's October 1st and it's 80 degrees here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I feel like we're not going to get political, but like the seasons are changing, like global warming is happening. And I do feel like hydroponics are also going to become more important because as these cuckoo seasons and as the seasons are like getting wackier and wackier, I think being able to grow food indoors successfully is going to be more and more important, right?
Yeah, it's such a complex issue because I think in different parts of the world, there's different reasons why growing indoors might be attractive. And so mm-hmm. you could take one extreme, which might be that, you know, we're in certain parts of Asia, for instance, especially experiencing more floods, which is then making it less predictable to grow outdoors. And also, you know, there's issues with the safety of that water that's going into the farming areas and that kind of thing. So you can see why people there, and we talk to people all the time who are building hydroponic farms in India, or they're building them so that they can control that environment that the plants are growing in. That's a very, very different reason to do it than, you know, people in New York City trying to do it because there just like literally isn't enough land and they want to have access to this stuff. And I think that another factor is that literally people are eating more salad now, and, you know, people are looking for reliable ways to grow, you know, thousands of heads of lettuce, and that's tricky. You know, one of the aspects that I really like about it is that it can bring access to fresh food to people who maybe have not had that. You know, a lot of people now live in the city, like 80%, 90% in some countries. Mm-hmm. And so being able to grow fresh produce and grow it reliably year round is very attractive for those people. I think it is this, you know, certainly in my mind, there's this conflict, right? Because hydroponics in some ways is artificial, you know, and you do want to support the land. You don't want us to just get rid of our farmland.
Right.
It's a very, very valuable resource. And so I think the best way to think about hydroponics is to be thoughtful about when it makes sense and maybe when it doesn't make sense, you know, and it doesn't necessarily make sense right now to do indoor farming for, you know, crops like wheat and soy and barley and these things that, you know, require huge amounts of space and light, and it doesn't make much sense. But it makes loads of sense, for instance, if you're, you know, up in Alaska in the wintertime and, you know, you would have to ship in lettuce from, you know, somewhere a long way on the planet, then it makes loads of sense and it's really interesting. So I think the more thoughtful people are about why they're doing it a certain way, the better we get use of that technology.
Yeah, you're selling me on this. I'm like, what can I grow hydroponically in my apartment this year? So let's talk about someone like me who's never really, I mean, I have grown up with my mom's aero garden, and I've had some passive hydroponic gardening kits that I've experimented with under a grow light. But what does it take if I'm me or a listener who wants to grow basil or maybe grow some lettuce hydroponically in my New York City apartment? Maybe I have southern facing windows, maybe I don't. You know, like what is the entry? Sometimes I feel like with hydroponic, semi-hydro, these things, like it feels very expensive to try and like get started. So what would I need?
Yeah, I'd say there's really two approaches. There's someone who wants to be a DIY tinkerer. And then there's people who maybe want to buy a simple system and something that's going to be not too complicated to install. And so I think if we take those second group of people to start with. Yeah, as you mentioned, there's a variety of different systems. So technically that aero garden, you know, is a hydroponic or aeroponic system. People love that because it's reliable, it's pretty well tested. They've been around for a while, so the design of that system may not be, if you're a modernist or like a minimalist in your apartment, may not be like exactly what you want.
They definitely have competitors with more like minimalist looks now too, for sure.
Right, exactly. So a popular one is called Click and Grow, and that's a unit that has a light in it, and it has three or four different spots for plants. What tends to happen with some of these companies is that they want to make money, obviously, and so they'll try to sell you the system and like little plugs or plants where you'll have to pay for the plant and the plug together, and you'll end up paying quite a lot of money for something that it's actually pretty simple. It's a seed and it's some growing media. So if you're conscious on price, you might want to, you know, just think about how much this system might cost to upkeep and replace plants in it. We work out of a WeWork, and one of the companies next to us actually produces a system like this, and they're called Eden, which is EDN.
Oh, yes, Eden.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, I would say there's easily a dozen of these companies that are selling a unit which is sort of about the size of a big toaster, and it has the light over the top.
The light built in, and it makes it pretty much, you fill it with water and it's going to grow for you. If you're looking just for like a simple solution to really just have like plug it in and you're going to get food.
Exactly. And so a really popular thing to use those four might be grow some basil, grow some mint, grow some parsley for your kitchen. And that could easily sit on your kitchen counter and be attractive and pretty minimal. Like, it's really easy to maintain. And most of those units are pretty reliable now. And then there are larger ones as well on the same sort of principle.
I saw one someone was advertising to me on my Instagram the other day. It's like a refrigerator almost sized.
Yeah, so there's a few people doing larger units now. And certainly even, you know, IKEA is looking into these things as well. Depending on the country, different systems are available. And so the idea of having a space within your kitchen or your home to grow multiple plants, you know, is becoming more and more attractive. It's obviously going to depend for different people, but I tend to find that the most useful things to grow there is going to be herbs, because they're expensive in the supermarket. I think a lot of people don't realize, you know, when you buy that little plastic clamshell of mint, you're paying, you know, $90 a pound or something for this stuff.
Yeah.
So if you compare that to buying salad greens, you know, growing at home for me, I think that makes less sense because the price of those is so much cheaper. So it's worth sort of thinking about what you might want to grow there.
Okay.
And then, you know, going back to those other kinds of people, the DIY people, the cool thing about hydroponics is like you can literally almost build a hydroponic system out of like anything. It's kind of crazy if you look online at the things that people have done. But the simplest possible hydroponic system is probably a bucket, like a 7-gallon, 9-gallon bucket. You take a lid, you'll drill some 1.75 inch or 2-inch holes in it, maybe four of those. And then you can buy some net pots. If you search net pots on Amazon, you'll see what I mean. They're these little, almost conical little mesh pots. You'll buy a few plugs. So if you search for hydroponic plugs or that kind of thing on Amazon. And then, yeah, you can plant a seed in there. You'll fill up the bucket up to maybe an inch below the top. And then you would buy a simple air bubbler, so the kind of thing that would go into a fish tank, and you buy some hydroponic nutrients. You know, there's many, many different suppliers. There's loads of different stuff out there. General Hydroponics is one supplier. There are plenty of others. And that would be kind of it. You would be bubbling your water. You would want to test it and dose it. And so you would want to buy a pH tester and what's called an EC meter or a TDS meter. They mean the same thing, essentially. And that would tell you how much nutrients are in your solution, and you can kind of balance that out. And within, I mean, it would take you, I don't know, 25 minutes to put that system together, and then you're kind of there. And obviously, you know, that's going to be something that it's a bucket, so it looks like a bucket. So it's like, right, it's not going to be like the sexiest piece of equipment. But you can, from then, you know, if you are a DIY type person, when you're building one of these things, you think, okay, I need a container, I need some way to oxygenate the water, I need a place for the plants to sit. And that's kind of it. So it could be anything. I've seen units, you know, made out of PVC piping, like wide diameter piping. We've seen things where literally someone will take a wooden box and fill it with a PVC or a vinyl sheet, you know, so that it's watertight. You can build something out of that.
So let's talk about growing media. So what do you guys use and what do you recommend? You can obviously buy plugs just to fit the pot, but what are those plugs made of?
Yeah, so there's a few different types. And the purpose of growing media in hydroponics is it often looks like soil, but actually it's inert. So the growing media is not giving any nutrients to the plant. And the criteria for growing media is really something that's going to give structure to the roots as they grow and something that isn't going to stay too moist, you know, because you don't want it to just log with water and tighten up. You know how if you overwater a plant, like the soil is going to clump up and it's going to drown the roots. You don't want something that's going to do that. And so growing media, if it can sort of fulfill those sort of purposes, then it's going to work. What you'll find that is that in a commercial environment like at Farm One, we're using a lot of this stuff. So we really want to be careful about sustainability. We want to make sure it's consistent. And also we're dealing with a lot of different plants. So we want to find like the perfect growing media for the different plants. And it can be literally for one type of microgreen, we might use something, and another type, we might use something else. But at home, it's not such a big deal. And so what you'll find is that most people will use maybe one of two or three different types. One of the most popular traditionally in hydroponics has been rock wool.
Rock wool.
Yeah, my British accent maybe makes it a little bit hard to...
No, I like it. It's
Thank
nice.
Thank you so much, yeah. So rock wool is actually an insulation material, weirdly enough. It's a stone clay material that has been heated to thousands of degrees, and it's turned into... It's almost like a cotton candy made of stone. It's kind of this meshy material. In small quantities, it's very easy to deal with because you sort of... you'll soak it, you'll make it wet, and then you'll plant your seeds in there and the seeds roots will push down through it, and it works really effectively. And you can get it in all kinds of shapes and sizes. So you can get something that looks like a small cube of it. Mm-hmm. You can get big cubes. So people growing bigger plants, like a lot of people in the cannabis industry will use a cube that's sort of the size of, again, like half a toaster. I'm going to use toaster as a unit.
Let's just use toasters. Yeah, exactly.
So you can get all kinds of different shapes, and we use sheets of it occasionally as well. You can get these thin sheets where you could grow microgreens in it. The downside of rock wool from a sustainability perspective is it's essentially sort of an inert clay substance, so it doesn't really negatively impact compost, but it's not really great for compost. So when you think of throwing this thing out, if you've got a whole load of compost that's all full of rock wool and a little bit of plants, that's not going to be a healthy compost mix. So think about how much of that you might be using, but if it's not big quantities, it can be fine. Then there are other things where there's these plugs that I was talking about that you might get in one of the commercial tabletop units. And those tend to be made out of sometimes coconut husk.
That's what I feel like I hear the most about, cocoa coir.
Yeah.
Or coca.
Yeah, so that cocoa coir, that can again come in different forms. You know, it can be in a sort of more rigid form where it's been bound with some kind of adhesive. So sometimes that's a plant-based adhesive and it's all fine. And it can be, again, molded into different shapes. Or you can have a loose cocoa coir mix. And sometimes that's mixed with perlite, which is going to give more aeration to that. So you could do that. Again, like, yeah, that can come in many forms. Or you'll get a more of a formed plug that is sort of this thing.
Is it like a wine cork sized or big?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. It's a little bit bigger, like a champagne cork.
Yeah, it's like a little triangle kind of, like a little cone of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And those can come in different sizes as well. So they might be 2 inches across, might be a little bit less. And you'll put your seed in that, and then it will grow again. And the roots will, what you'll find in hydroponics that might be a little bit unusual to people is the roots will just grow through that, and then they'll extend into the water, and the roots will be loose kind of in the water. So we're really used to seeing roots in soil sort of bound up in this very, you know, specific structure. But in hydroponics, a lot of these roots will be like waving around as the water flows, and that's perfectly fine. The plants are fine. As long as they're stable within that plug, then they're okay.
Okay. So just to recap, you've got some sort of pot that you're going to be putting the water solution in. You've got the top to the pot and some form of growing media, whether it's a plug you're going to buy online or whether it's coco coir or rock wool that you're putting in a net pot. And all of this stuff is available on Amazon because I just bought a bunch of stuff for my semi-hydro. I'm experimenting with some semi-hydro stuff with houseplants. You're going to put the seed in whatever plug or net pot full of inert, sterile growing media. You're popping the seed in there and you're just letting it sit. Oh, so the bubbler. So hydroponic, because the difference between hydroponic and passive is a bubbler. So why is the pump so important?
You know, what roots really need to be a healthy plant is they need nutrients, they need water, but they also need oxygen. Mm-hmm. And people, like, that's why plants can drown, you know, is they're not getting that oxygen because the soil has bound up too close to the roots. And so in a hydroponic system, you're trying to provide oxygen to those roots. Now, in passive hydroponics, which is often called like a Kratky method, for instance, the level of the water will be going down. So there's kind of an air gap in between, you know, the plant's top of the plant's roots and the water. And so you'll find these little, sometimes people call them air roots, where there's these tiny little fuzzy roots that are actually absorbing a lot of oxygen from that air that they've got access to. In a regular hydroponic system, which you might call active hydroponics potentially, you'll be not so worried about the level of that water. You'll be making sure that the water itself is oxygenated so that there are any roots that are in the water are getting access to enough air. And so in a small home system, you do that with a little bubbler, which is just adding bubbles to the water. As the system gets larger, you'll start to think more about cooling that water. There's a principle in physics which is about dissolved oxygen. And essentially, the colder the water is, the more dissolved oxygen can be present in that water.
Okay.
And so, of course, you'll want to make sure that water isn't too hot. In a small system where you've got a bubbler and you've got excess bubbles, you don't really need to worry about that.
Okay. And you just pop the bubbler into your container and you just plug it in and it just runs. It's not like set on a timer or anything like that. It's just bubbling like a fish tank would be. It's like that simple.
Exactly. One of the funny things about hydroponics is that, you know, before I got into this, I was watching all these videos on YouTube and I was reading all these articles and I think I overcomplicated it in my mind. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh, I'm worried about this or that. And then when you actually do it, you're like, oh, this is really simple. Like, this is not complex at all. And I think, you know, it's one of these things where if you have a bit of an attitude of trial and error and you're okay with a couple of plants dying every so often and then figuring things out, you'll have a lot of fun with it.
So I think the most intimidating part about hydroponic gardening, especially for a beginner, would be the nutrients. So what is important if we're just getting started with like a basic setup? What nutrients do we need to be thinking about? And if you have any companies you might suggest that you feel like are solid?
Yeah, sure. So there's obviously, you could spend 6 weeks talking about nutrients. But
yeah, totally.
The key thing that really happened with plant science is that we understood that plants need a certain set of nutrients to survive. And, you know, ones that we often know in the garden might be nitrogen and potassium and a couple of others like that. And so in the most basic hydroponic nutrient solution, which was, as I said, developed in the 30s, you'd have 13 different nutrients. And you could technically, if you wanted to, if you were a mad science person, you could literally buy powders of most of those things at home and you could mix that up and you could make a solution. I really recommend you do not do that.
Not interested.
It's very complicated. It's not worth it. This is like one of the places where companies that do this all the time are much better placed to do it than us. Mm-hmm. So what you'll do in a small system is you'll literally buy some solutions from Amazon. And normally you'll literally need two things, sometimes three. And the first one would be a nutrient solution. And, you know, as I said, there's many, many suppliers out there. I would choose, again, one from Amazon. As I said, General Hydroponics is one popular supplier. There are others. You do not need to buy fancy cannabis, like super grow, amazing this and that solution. Like for the home gardener who's doing some basic stuff, you do not need to do that. That solution will be something where you'll want to dose your what's called your reservoir, which is that tank of water, up to a certain level. And we measure that level in terms of electrical conductivity. This is where it gets a tiny bit sciencey, but don't worry. Okay. It's like super easy. So what we're doing when we measure electrical conductivity, or EC for short, is we're measuring how many conductive things there are in the water. And normally that's a level of minerals and salts and that kind of thing. And so in your nutrient solution, there's all that stuff. And when you measure electrical conductivity, the higher that number is, the more stuff there is in the water. And the lower that number is, the less stuff there is. And okay. So it's a very crude way of measuring, like, okay, how much nutrients did I put in there? And how much has been taken out by the plant? And because the plant is going to gradually absorb those nutrients, and so the level is going to go down, and then you're going to top it up again to bring it up to that right level. And so as an example, a lot of the time at Farm One, we're going to be looking for an EC of maybe 1.8 to 2.0. And you don't need to remember that number, because if you buy nutrients, they will tell you
right. what that number They're going to say put like 4 droppers worth of this in 1 quart of water.
Yeah, right. For instance, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I need. I just need someone to tell me exactly what to do. Okay.
Yeah. And so to get slightly more sophisticated, one of the things that you can also change in a hydroponic system is you can adjust that pH really easily. And so home gardeners will know the pH of soil, for instance. And the reason why pH in hydroponics is interesting is because at different levels of pH, the plant is going to be better at absorbing some nutrients versus others.
Okay. You know?
And so I like these kind of graphs and stuff, but there's these interesting sort of things where you can see if the pH is higher, this is just an example, this is not true, but like it might be absorbing iron more, and if it's lower, it might be manganese or something. So you can start to, I think the nice thing about it is you can start to understand like, oh, this is why I need to be in a certain pH range so that my plant can access all the nutrients it needs without getting out of whack. And in hydroponics, to adjust this, well, first of all, you're going to try to measure the pH. And so you can use test strips if you wanted to, but you could buy a measuring, we call it a truncheon because it looks like a long stick. And then you would adjust the pH using what's called a pH buffer. So you'd have one that's called pH up and one that's called pH down, and you would add a little bit and you would test again. And so if you want to be super simple, you probably don't even need to do that. If you want to start to have a little bit more control over your system, then you'll start to measure that EC, you'll start to measure the pH, and you'll start to tinker a little bit with it.
And is there a good general pH that you want for those plants to be absorbing, or does it vary per plant?
Yeah, so normally you're looking for a slightly acidic pH, you know, so 7 would be your neutral level. So often you're looking at about 6, 5.5 or so. But if you're growing like a lot of one specific plant, you should really look into like, oh, maybe I'll need to be slightly more acidic or otherwise.
One of my Patreon plant friends, which are a part of our listener community, Megan wrote in asking, is there a comprehensive resource for information like this, like for nutrient info and like different plants needing different stuff? Like, is there a good resource you recommend besides your book? Because you have a book that we could.
I mean, my book is obviously fantastic, but I think one of the tricky things online is that for different kinds of plants, there isn't a really reliable way online to go and find that information. And one of the frustrating things is like, you know, if you go to Johnny's and you buy your seeds, there's great information about the soil and when to plant, all that kind of stuff. There isn't really an equivalent thing for hydroponics yet. So, you know, we tend to still be looking on like message boards and looking at people's experience with different things. You know, certainly if you buy some nutrients, they'll give you a little guide. But I would love it if someone would create a good, reliable resource out there online to provide that information. Yeah.
Got it. And for people interested in learning more, what's the name of your book again?
My book is called Ditch the Dirt.
Ditch the Dirt. Right. We'll link to it in the show notes to make sure if people want to learn more. So basically, you're getting your pot, you're putting your water in it, you're getting your inert media, and then you're monitoring the nutrient and pH level. But it sounds like it's pretty simple. It's just getting the right nutrient bottle and then following the instructions. And then you could, if your plants are doing well, not be testing pH and EC. But if you wanted to up that level, you would buy, you were saying, pH test strips or the pH, what's it called?
We call it a truncheon. You can spend not very much money on those. I mean, you might get one for $50 or $60 or something like that, which will last you for a while. The point really is that if you're doing maybe one or two plants in a casual way at home, just following the directions on the Nutria bottle is going to be sufficient. If you're doing multiple plants in different areas, you might want to just get more sophisticated, because you might just encounter a few like plant health issues where you're going to be able to resolve that by adjusting pH or nutrient levels. The last sort of important thing is that, you know, if you're building a hydroponic system, you'll notice that most people are building that out of an opaque plastic or a material. And so what you'll try to make sure is that you're not letting a lot of light hit the water surface or get into the water, because that really is just going to encourage algae to grow. And because algae are going to feed on the same hydroponic nutrients that you're putting in there for the plant, the algae is not going to damage the plant. It's going to look messy, but mostly it's actually going to just take away nutrients from your plant. And so it's going to be competing. So that's why you'll see all hydroponic system designs, if they're good designs, are going to try to prevent that algae from growing by stopping light getting into the water. And the other thing I would say is, normally in a home system, there's two sort of schools of thought about hydroponics. Like, some people say they never clean their system and they balance out the bacteria and enzymes and it's perfect. The easiest thing to do if you do not want to have to perfectly balance the system is, after a few weeks, maybe 4 weeks, 3 weeks, just empty it out and then put in some fresh water and redose. And what that's doing really is that there's two things. It's making sure your system is clean, because you want a clean system. And it's okay during that cleaning, if you're spending 10 minutes cleaning, it's okay for the plant to just hang out and wait for you to put it back in. But what it's also doing is making sure that there isn't an imbalance in those nutrients. And so if you've got a plant that uptakes a lot of, say manganese or something like that, by resetting that system, you're going to make sure that it still has access to the same level of nutrients, and you can get it back to that kind of balanced state. So that's why most people do that.
And you recommend cleaning once a month?
You could do it a little bit more frequently than that, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Definitely once a month, makes a lot of sense.
Okay. And if you do notice that there is an algae buildup or your water's looking weird, like, just dump it, clean it out, and start fresh.
Yeah.
That's what this is all about, trial and error, right?
Exactly. And I think that it may look like you're throwing out loads of water, but actually, every 3 weeks or so, like a gallon of water, like it's not that different to how much you would have watered the plant anyway. So, certainly that's the nice thing about hydroponics. It actually tends to be pretty efficient in terms of water use.
Okay. And obviously lighting is something we didn't talk about, but listeners, if you're interested in learning about grow lights, you can go back to 2 episodes ago when I did a whole episode on grow lights you can learn about. So I was fortunate enough to go to Farm One and get a tour. And I think Rob is being a little bashful about how awesome your farm is. So Farm One, the 40 restaurants you're talking about, you basically grow like super high-end herbs and delicacies, and you're selling to like high-end restaurants, like all the Michelin star. Aren't you in the basement of a Michelin star restaurant?
Yeah, it actually has 2 Michelin stars, which is nice.
Oh, so fancy. Yeah. And what's its name again?
That restaurant is called Aterra.
Right, Aterra.
A-T-E-R-A. Yeah.
So you're in the basement of a Michelin star restaurant growing these like crazy high-end culinary herbs and flowers to distribute. And it's just the coolest. It was such a fun thing. And what I want people to know is you actually offer tours, right?
Yeah, that's right. Because what happened was, we built our farm and my friends would say, hey, can I come and see your farm? And then their friends would say, can I come and see your farm? And then friends of friends of friends. And we actually just had realized like, okay, we can't just keep showing this thing around to everybody. So we do tours, and we do tours 6 days a week. And you can come for an hour and you'll get a glass of Prosecco and you get a guided tour of the facility, and you can taste dozens and dozens of these plants, most of which you will never have tasted before, even if you're a keen gardener, I would say. And you get to know how it works, and we give you a little briefer on the technology. You can see these systems in action. And I think people have a lot of fun there. We have families, we have people who come on dates, we have groups, we do private group tours as well. And it's a really important part of our business. And I think that, one of the cool things about having a farm in Manhattan is you can share this technology with people. You can share this like love of food. And it's something that we're really passionate about. So I definitely encourage people who are visiting New York or who live here to come by and check it out.
our community like loves to do plant shopping days, like on weekends where you go and you like pick six different house plant shops and you like tour around. And I would say an even better, more fun plant date would be take the money you were going to buy a plant with and go do a tour, because you do, you get Prosecco, but you, I learned so much in the tour, and also just like nerding out with you guys about like the pillars that the plants are on actually move. It's like almost a book store kind of like, it's the coolest experience. I can't recommend it enough. So all the links for that will be in the show notes. Are there any other fun ways that we can interact with you guys? Where can we find you on socials and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So we're on Instagram. We're just at farm.one, farm one. And we post, you know, pictures and things there, which is fun. And then, you know, you can go to our website, farm.one, and book tours. And of course, we do classes as well. So we do a 2-hour hydroponics class Wednesdays and Saturdays. And that's a great way to dive deeper and really understand the technology. And our instructor there, Katari, he's just a really, really knowledgeable guy. And like he will really give a good background on why hydroponics is important, what aspects are interesting. And he has a really good understanding in general of agriculture. And so that's a great learning experience as well. So we love visitors, and we'd love to see your listeners come and visit Farm One.
Absolutely. The people who work for you, when I did my tour, I was that annoying girl who asked like a million questions, and they were so game. They were so ready to like meet me at the insane level that I was at. All the links to check out Farm One will be in the show notes. I can't recommend visiting the farm more, plant friends. So tag me and Rob when you go visit the farm. I want to see what you're eating and what you're trying. And thanks so much, Rob. Thank you for your time and your expertise. I so appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I've had a lot of fun.
Thank you, Rob, for that wonderful conversation. I wish we had more time with him, because I feel like there's just so much you could talk about with hydroponics, and we only had like 45 minutes, but I'm so thankful for his time. And like I said, I'm sharing this conversation to ideally inspire you to maybe get one of those setups we discussed, or maybe create your own setup if you think that that might be interesting and fun for you to explore. And if not, you just know a little bit about hydroponic gardening now. I know I like waxed on about it so long in our conversation, but that tour of Farm One would be such a fun date or such a fun plant friend excursion, because you just learn stuff, you get to taste stuff, you get to drink stuff. It's just so much fun. So make sure you can check the links in the show notes for all of the information on Farm One and where to find Rob and how to take a tour. If you are interested in maybe experimenting with any of the stuff that we discussed in the conversation, I do have an Amazon storefront for all of the hydroponic stuff we discussed. I'm not sponsored by any of these hydroponic companies, but Mama Fiella has been using AeroGarden forever. She's had an AeroGarden in her kitchen. Like, I don't even remember a time that she didn't have it, but she, in the winter, grows all of her like basil and herbs and parsley and all that good stuff. She grows it in her AeroGarden. And like Rob said, there's another company called Click and Grow that is like a smaller, kind of like sexy looking setup, more minimalist setup for a countertop. So all of those will be linked in the Amazon storefront, as well as the fertilizer that Rob was talking about, all that good stuff. So you can check it out. And like I've said in previous episodes, I have Amazon storefronts for pretty much most of our episodes that we talk about any form of DIY. So in case you want to DIY something, there's a resource where you can find it all. And if you do purchase through Amazon, I'm an Amazon associate, which means that Bloom and Grow gets a portion of the sale at no extra cost to you. So Amazon just does that to us as a courtesy. So it's a fun way for you to support the show while just supporting your planty passion. Thank you so much again to our fabulous Patreon plant friends. Thank you for supporting Bloom and Grow Radio and helping me get these episodes out and to as many people as possible. If you're interested in checking out Patreon, you can click the link in the show notes. And thank you, thank you, thank you to Soltech Solutions, today's episode sponsor. We all know that I'm obsessed with Soltech Solutions. I have three of their aspect pendant hanging lights in my apartment. They just released their Highland track system that is perfect for grow walls or plants in hard to reach places. So if you are interested in checking out Soltech Solutions and getting a sweet discount, you can go to soltechsolutions.com and use code BLOOM15 for 15% off. Once again, soltechsolutions.com and use code BLOOM15 for 15% off. Everything is linked in the show notes. My sweetest plant friends, until next time, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you're loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing.